The dust is settling on another wild week in American politics. There was the acquittal of President Trump, and Democrats are in disarray because the Iowa caucuses are still too close to call.
And tonight in New Hampshire, seven of the Democrats running for president will square off in another debate just days ahead of the first in the nation primary there. Our Friday roundtable joins us now. We've got Beth Fooey, a senior politics editor at MSNBC and NBC. She joins us today from New Hampshire Public Radio. Hi, Beth.
Hey there.
And Jesse Holland, host at C-SPAN's Washington Journal. He is in Washington. Hello, Jesse.
How you doing?
Pretty good, thanks. And let's start with you, Jesse. I'm going to set the stage for tonight's debate. Pete Buttigieg, of course, will be there. He now appears to have won Iowa by a razor-thin margin over Bernie Sanders, though both are claiming victory, and it kind of does depend on how you count. Elizabeth Warren will be there. Joe Biden, Amy Klobuchar, and Andrew Yang and Tom Steyer. Those two barely registered in Iowa. But Jesse, is tonight's debate going to feel different now that the stakes are getting so much higher?
Oh, yes. It's in this debate tonight that we'll actually see the knives come out. The great thing about winning Iowa is that you get that boost coming out of the state and moving into New Hampshire. The bad thing about winning Iowa is that tonight everyone will be after Buttigieg and Sanders. Every idea that people can think that will hurt them if you're a Democrat, they're going to throw out in the debate tonight. Because coming out of Iowa is South Carolina, and if people like Joe Biden can't get a boost in New Hampshire in the primary there, it might see the end for several of the other candidates in the race.
That's really interesting, Jesse. Beth, I want to talk to you a little bit about, all eyes will be on Buttigieg and Sanders, but I'm thinking about 4 years ago during the Republican New Hampshire debates when then-Governor Chris Christie turned the tables on Senator Marco Rubio. It was not only embarrassing for Rubio, but it basically eclipsed his rapid rise in the polls. Now that this Democratic field is narrowing, aside from Biden, what other candidates do you see having a similar turning point in this race?
Well, there's so many to look at because normally after Iowa, the field narrows considerably. A bunch of candidates typically drop out. Because we had that that mess in Iowa, nobody's dropped out. Everybody's sort of resetting here in New Hampshire. And yes, of course, we did see that it was Pete Buttigieg and Bernie Sanders coming out essentially tied. But nonetheless, we still do have this very large field. So there's a lot of three-dimensional chess going on. Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg kind of vying against one another, kind of the more progressive side of the Democratic Party versus what Pete Buttigieg is trying to carve out as the more centrist side. You've got Elizabeth Warren, who had a disappointing third place showing, sort of a distant third place showing in Iowa. She's trying to be the one who says she can unite those two sides of the party while, for so long being primarily affiliated with the progressive Bernie Sanders lane. She's now trying to say she can unite both sides. You've got Joe Biden, who has been the national front runner, but took a real drubbing there in Iowa. How is he going to recover? He's been talking about the first four contests as being all kind of one package, and that's how his campaign is viewing them. That means that's kind of code for saying he can lose both Iowa and New Hampshire and maybe get that firewall in South Carolina with those African-American voters who've been very supportive of him. So you've got a lot of dynamics going on today and through next Tuesday. I agree with Jesse that the knives really will be out for Pete Buttigieg and Bernie Sanders tonight of the debate, and their knives will be aimed at one another.
Joe Biden's going to have to go through Nevada first. They all will, so that's going to be before South Carolina. But what about this debacle in Iowa? I want to hear this tape from Bernie Sanders, who really blasted the Iowa Democratic Party for its inability to count the votes in a timely manner.
That screw-up has been extremely unfair to the people of Iowa. It has been unfair to the candidates, all of the candidates, and all of their supporters.
Jesse, pretty candid language there from Bernie Sanders. His supporters are also now calling for the head of the Democratic National Committee, Tom Perez, to step down. What do you make of this growing rift between Sanders and the party? It kind of feels like deja vu 2016.
Well, first of all, there's been a big push to get Iowa out of the lead for the Democratic and Republican contests for a long time.
Is that going to happen now? I'm curious.
Well, I mean, Iowa is going to try its best not to let it happen because it's a big boon for the state. But looking at the voters in Iowa, I mean, they don't really are not really representative of the Democratic Party anymore. So Iowa's going to try its best to stay there. But a lot of the other states and some people in the party want Iowa to move out of the way and not be so determinative on who the Democratic candidate is going to be. And you have to admit, this was a huge mistake for Iowa. I mean, not being able to get the votes counted right, to come up with a new system of doing it, not doing the testing they should have. I mean, they've given ammunition for the Democratic Party to start thinking about moving them out of the way.
Beth, what about that rift between Sanders and the DNC, though?
So I think Bernie Sanders is voicing what probably all the candidates feel, and he's just feeling emboldened enough to put words to it in public. Look, as Jesse said, I mean, it's a state that has been kind of on the knife's edge about whether it could keep this first in the nation status. It really is not a representative state in any which way of the American population. Plus, it is not a battleground state for Democrats. It is a state that President Trump won by 10 points in 2016. There's no real sign that Democrats are going to compete actively there in the general election. So it just kind of looked like a big boon to Iowa's economy and Iowa's status, while not returning what these candidates justifiably deserve, which is timely and accurate counting. What Bernie Sanders said is what they are all feeling.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about fears for the party itself and a nominee that can actually win. Here's Democratic strategist James Carville on MSNBC this week.
It matters who the candidate is. It matters what a party chooses to talk about. I mean, I'm 75 years old. Why am I here doing this? Because I am scared to death. That's why. And we got to let's get relevant here, people, for sure.
I mean, here is a prominent Democrat who supported Hillary Clinton, very afraid about the future. Jesse, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, that once again, this brings us back around to what the problem is with Iowa. Now, coming out with Pete Buttigieg and Bernie Sanders in the lead, will those two people be in the lead in Nevada and South Carolina, which are much more representative of what the actual Democratic Party looks like? So just because the majority white voters in Iowa, and frankly, even the majority white voters in the New Hampshire primaries, think that these two candidates are the ones who should represent the Democratic Party, will states that actually are representative of the Democratic Party think that? And I mean, frankly, that has a lot of people in the Democratic Party concerned that they'll come out with candidates out of these first two contests that aren't really representative of the entire party. That would concern me if I was in the Democratic Party as well.
Well, I am going to make it just a wild guess here that the two of you paid some attention to what President Trump was doing yesterday in the East Room of the White House, an hour-long kind of freestyle celebration, really, of his acquittal on two articles of impeachment. Let's listen.
They took nothing. They took a phone call that was a totally appropriate call. I call it a perfect call because it was. And they brought me to the final stages of impeachment. But now we have that gorgeous word. I never thought a word would sound so good. It's called total acquittal.
Beth, so here we have the president reveling in the triumph of his week. And at the same time, as we've been talking about, the Democrats just fighting over the terrible week that they just had. What can you say about the divergent paths that these two parties appear to be taking, at least at this moment?
Well, the news cycle moves so quickly in the era of Trump that, yes, it does seem like a pretty bad week for Democrats, pretty good week for President Trump this week. But who knows what next week is going to bring? Every day it seems that there's some huge newsworthy revelation out of Washington, out of the White House that distracts us and grabs our attention. But look, there are some enduring lessons here. Number one, the debacle out of Iowa definitely does expose problems within the Democratic Party that they desperately need to fix if they're going to mount a credible nominee against President Trump in November. But from Washington, what we're seeing once again is President Trump managing to escape. He's like Houdini. Any situation that he gets in where he is imperiled, somehow he manages to escape and to declare victory, to declare that he was right, that he was justified, and that he has no reason to apologize, express any sort of regret whatsoever. It's very much been the pattern of this presidency. People marvel at how how it continues to happen over and over. But it definitely does sort of show two different sides of survival. One, the Democrats, you know, sort of scrambling and President Trump riding high.
Yeah, Jesse, your thoughts, of course, as Beth said, so much could happen in the next few days. But what are you looking forward to next week?
Well, while President Trump seems to always be able to escape by the skin of his teeth all of the things that imperil him, there's always that next thing sitting right over the horizon. And for him, it's still called John Bolton. Keep in mind, John Bolton's book has not yet been released. House Democrats are still talking about subpoenaing Bolton, who one of the few Republicans in public life that don't seem to have any loyalty to President Trump at all. So who knows what John Bolton would say if he comes in front of the House and testifies about what he saw with Ukraine. So while President Trump always seems to escape the ultimate punishment, these little tiny things that keep popping up here and there, we expect to see them all the way through to the election.
And it's hard to keep track of all those little tiny things. Jesse Holland is a host at C-SPAN's Washington Journal, and Beth Fooey, senior politics editor at MSNBC and NBC. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.